All right, John chapter 3. This is our lesson number 8, part number 8 of our study here. And we're on the second half of this technical conversation. So, again, we'll open up with the reading. We'll begin in verse 10. So we're in John chapter 3, verse 10. Jesus responds to Nicodemus, "Are you a master of Israel and know not these things? Verily, verily, I say unto you, we speak that we do know, and testify that we have seen, and you receive not our witness. If I have told you earthly things, and you believe not, how shall you believe if I tell you of heavenly things? And no man hath ascended up into heaven, but he that has come down from heaven, even the Son of Man, which is in heaven. And as Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness, even so must the Son of Man be lifted up, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish, but have eternal life. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. For God sent not his Son into the world to condemn the world, but that the world through him might be saved. He that believeth on him is not condemned, but he that believeth not is condemned already, because he hath not believed in the name of the only begotten Son of God." And so we're focused on this second half of the conversation. We made the transition last week from the first part of the conversation to the second part of the conversation. And we primarily compared the relationship of the illustration in verse 8 to the application or testimony that is made in verses 12 and 13. So tonight we're going to, our focal point is to pay attention to the verse that we skipped, and then we'll give some attention to verse 14. So verses 11 and 14 is our two focal points for tonight's lesson. So remember, the overall context or application of this conversation was the mindset of the Jews was expecting, is the kingdom at hand? Now will you establish the kingdom? And with the old covenant promises, there was this anticipation, or there was this expectation, that the Jews would be gathered from all over the world and they would be automatic citizens of this particular kingdom. And so Jesus' opening comment, verse 3, was, "You must be born from above." And the application, the illustration of verse 8 was indicating you don't understand the source of that from above, but in order to be a citizen of that kingdom, you must be born from above. He says in verse 7, "Marvel not that I have told you this." And he gives that illustration about the wind. We can see the wind's effects, but we don't know where it's coming from or where it's going. But in that present moment, we see the wind, we recognize the wind, we understand the wind. So we can trust in that it came from somewhere, and we can trust in that it's going somewhere. Well, so is in the context of the resurrection. Must be born from above. And we don't know or understand the things of its source, and we know that the kingdom is to come, where it's coming from, where it's going, but in that present moment, we do know this about the resurrection. The Pharisees believed in a physical, literal resurrection. The prophecy of the kingdom was a physical, literal kingdom. These are tangible things that we can comprehend. So he declares in verse 12, "If I tell you of earthly things and you don't believe that, then how shall you believe of the heavenly things? No one from this earth," verse 13, "no one from this earth, this life, has ever gone up into heaven, but the Son of Man has come down and is testifying to these things." So we skipped over verse 11. Last week we skipped over verse 11. I tried to emphasize this in the opening reading, that there is a strange change in the pronoun that is utilized. The pronoun that is expressed in your English does match up with the pronoun that is expressed in the Greek language. That there is an intentional plurality in verse 11. But all of the preceding conversation is in a first person, I, Jesus, am speaking to you. And after verse 11, it returns to that first person, I, Jesus, speaking to you. I am testifying to these things. But in verse 11 is this unusual shift of plurality. We have spoken these things, and you have not received our report. So there becomes that sense of curiosity to why there is a change. And the first part of this conversation is a contrast between earthly things and spiritual things. And we do recognize that at the beginning of Jesus' earthly ministry, we find that at his baptism, he was the Spirit of God descended upon him. And to the context of the Gospels, the Spirit of God was in him. And so that sense of plurality could be in that reference to him and the Spirit of God. But I petition to you that that is probably not the intention here. The indwelling Spirit of God becomes a gift unto the church after the resurrection of Christ. But what we do find is later Jesus intentionally speaks to the Father's role of testifying to the Son. And let me direct your attention to John chapter 6. A couple of chapters later, Jesus is going to address the Jews concerning the sense of the Father's role of testifying concerning him. And so over here in John chapter 6, we see Jesus is addressing these things, and he's going to speak concerning the miracles, and that these miracles come because the Father has given them unto him, and these are a testimony concerning him. I direct your attention to verse 43. In John chapter 6, verse 43, we find this statement that is made, "Murmur not amongst yourselves, no man can come to me except the Father which sent me, and draw him, and I will raise him up in the last day. It is written in the prophets, and they shall be taught of God. Every man, therefore, that hath heard and hath learned of the Father comes unto me. Not that any man hath seen the Father, except which is of God, he hath seen the Father. Verily, verily, I say unto you, he that believeth on me in everlasting life, I am the bread of life, and your father did eat manna in the wilderness and are dead. This is the bread which comes down from the heaven, and a man may eat of thereof and die not. I am the living bread and cast down from heaven. If any man eat of this bread, he shall live forever. And the bread that I will give is my flesh, which I will give unto the life of the world." So we find in this contrast that is given there the sense that the symbolism of Jesus being that sent from heaven, we found that in John chapter 3, and that sense was to be the illustration or the comparison which is given unto the manna which is to come. And so that bread of life, and there was another reference, and I can't seem to see it at this moment, but we find that this testimony that the Father is a testament concerning the Son being sent. And in that specific text is this sense that the miracles were given unto the Son for the purpose of testifying that he was sent by the Father. In the opening of our conversation in John chapter 3, you recognize that Nicodemus says that no man could do these miracles unless they were done or lest they were sent by the Father which is which sent him. And so if you turn with me to Matthew in chapter 3, Matthew chapter 3, there is recorded here at the baptism of Jesus Christ. In Matthew in chapter 3, at the baptism of Jesus Christ, we see that the Spirit of God descends upon the Son of God. But in every single one of the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, all of them testify concerning the moment that occurs after. And I draw your attention to Matthew chapter 3 and in verse 17. Matthew chapter 3, verse 17, it says, "And lo, a voice from heaven saying, 'This is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased.'" And so in that sense, there was a verbal speaking of God the Father from heaven, and all of the Gospels record that, this was witnessed by those that were around, that God the Father testified concerning that this was His Son that was sent. Shift over now to Matthew chapter 12. In Matthew chapter 12, we find here that Jesus points their attention to the prophecy or the prophetic statement that was made in the book of Isaiah. And here he puts it in this context. And we begin reading in verse 15. Matthew chapter 12, verse 15. "But when Jesus knew this," When he recognized that there was a change amongst Judaism, amongst Israel, concerning him as the Christ. Remember, I shared with you a couple of weeks ago that their entire culture and their entire Mosaic law was instilling them that they were to look for the prophet. And here, these miracles given to him by the Father were a testament that he was that prophet. Well, there was a change in the culture of rejection. Here we find in verse 15, "When Jesus knew it, he withdrew himself." Notice the conscious choice, the conscious decision. "He withdrew himself. A great multitude followed him, and he healed them all, and he charged them." Pay attention to that. "He instructed them, charged them, that they should not make him known. Thus, in order to fulfill the spoken by Isaiah the prophet, saying," and he quotes here Isaiah chapter 42, verses 1 through 3. Here, Matthew records it like this: "Behold my servant whom I have chosen, my beloved in whom my soul is well pleased. I will put my spirit upon him, and he shall show judgment," and notice the audience, "to the Gentiles. He shall strive, not cry, neither shall any man hear his voice in the streets. A bruised reed shall he not break, and smoking flax shall he not quench, till he sends forth the judgments. And his name shall the Gentiles trust." Notice the slight change or slight difference in the statement, "my beloved whom I am well pleased, whom I will put my spirit upon him." Turn back over unto John. The passage I was looking for, I wrote the wrong chapter down, so I apologize for that. But here in John chapter 5, in the lateness of the hour, this will be the last reading. In John chapter 5, we find Jesus explaining the witnesses concerning the Christ that is to come. I begin reading here in verse 31. John chapter 5, verse 31. "If I, Jesus, bear witness of myself, my witness is not true." And let me just interject here. In their culture, in their law, in order to establish a fact, it required two witnesses, two people who agree, which is why when Jesus goes on trial, we find they had to find two people willing to testify in like manner concerning the fault of Christ. And it's also why you find in Matthew chapter 18 concerning what we now call church discipline that two witnesses go and speak unto the person and then they report back to the church. The witness isn't about the deed, it's about the rebellious heart. So here he says, if I alone give testimony, then my testimony is not valid. Now, we live in a very different society, and evidence has to be proven by paper and pictures and DNA samples, and we don't trust anyone's word. That's why we have notaries and oaths of office and contracts that are full of all kinds of legalism. But here he says, if I testify myself, my witness is not true. There is another that bears witness of me, and I know that that witness, which he witnesses of me, is true. You sent unto John, and he bare witness unto the truth, but I received not testimony from man. But these things I say, that you might be salvaged. He was a burning and shining light, and ye were willing for a season to rejoice in that light. But I have a greater witness than John. For the works, there's that miracle, for the works which the Father has given to me to finish the same works I do, it bears witness of me that the Father hath sent me. And the Father himself has sent me, and he has borne witness of me, and you have neither heard his voice at any time nor seen his shape, but you have not his word abiding in you, for whom he hath sent, you believe him not. And so in this particular text, it bears concerning the miracles were a testament to him and who he was. He was sent of the Father. And so there's that dual witness that is established. We also find the miracles are a testament, and then we find at the baptism, the verbal testament to those that are there concerning God the Father speaking, "This is my Son, who I am. Well pleased." So in our text, John chapter 3, verse 11, Nicodemus comes unto Jesus and says, "You are a teacher that has come from God. No man can do such miracles unless they are sent." And Jesus says, verse 10, "You are a master of Israel and you don't realize these things, you don't understand these things. Verily, verily, I say unto you, we speak what we know." Remember the heavenly things? "We speak what we know, and we testify what we have seen." He says later, "I came down from heaven, I testify to these things, and you receive not our witness." Jesus come unto his people, and they did not receive his witness. We'll pick up with the second verse. Verse 12, Moses lifts up the serpent, and how that relates to John 3:16 next week. So let us stand as we are dismissed tonight.